Chapter 27 Night Strife. I gave Murgan my dirtiest look as he rode up. He understood it. We would talk later. For the moment, he said, "You told me to keep an eye on them." Swan reached me a moment later.
"Gods, you guys move fast. I'm shot."
He made an obscene gesture at the sky.
"We leave 5 minutes after you and find out you had time to take a couple of breaks and still stay ahead of us."
He shook his head.
"Bunch of iron men. Told you I wasn't cut out for this crap, Cordy."
"Where is everybody?" Murgan asked.
"I don't know. We got ambushed. We got separated."
Mather, Swan, and Blade exchanged glances. Swan asked,
"Little brown guys, all wrinkly.
You know them?"
"We had a run-in with them when we were headed north. Man, I got me a brainstorm. We going to jaw, let's do it out of the rain. My lumbago is killing me."
"Lumbago?" Mather asked. "When did you come up with lumbago?"
"When I forgot my hat and it started raining on my head. Blade, you was in this place last year. They got like an inn or something."
Blade didn't say anything, just turned his horse and headed out. He was an odd one, for sure. But Swan thought he was an all right guy. And I liked Swan, as much as I could like anybody who worked for somebody who was trying to play games with me. I was about to follow up last with Murgan when Murgan said,
"Hold up, somebody's coming."
He pointed. I looked into the drizzle to the south and saw three shapes, riders coming in. Their mounts were tall enough that they could be nothing but ladies' gifts. Swan cursed the delay, but we waited. The three were Hagop, Otto, and the Roy Shadid. Shadid looked ragged, and Hagop and Otto were wounded. "Damn you two, can't you take a crap without getting hurt?" In the 30 or so years I had known them, it seemed they had come up wounded about 3 times a year, and survived everything. I'd begun to suspect they were immortal, and the blood was the price they paid. "They piled an ambush on top of the ambush, Croker," Hagop said. "They ran us down that valley right into another gang on horseback." My stomach tightened. "And?" He put on a feeble grin. "I figure they're sorry they did. We cut them up bad." "Where are the others?"
"I don't know. We scattered. Lady said for Shadid to ride back up here with us and wait. She led them off."
"All right. Blade, why don't you show us where to roost?" Murgan looked at me with a question unspoken. I told him, "Yeah, we'll get them settled. Then we'll go." The place Blade took us wasn't really an inn, just a big house where the owner made a bit taking in travelers. He was not thrilled to see us, though like everybody else in this end of the world, he seemed to know who we were. The color of our coin brightened his day and livened his smile. Still, I think he let us in mainly because he thought we would get rowdy if he didn't. I got Otto and Hagop sewed up and bandaged and generally settled into a routine they knew all too well. Meanwhile, the householder brought food, for which Swan expressed our sincere gratitude. Murgan said,
"It's going to be getting dark, Croker."
"I know. Swan, we're going out to find the others. Got a spare horse if you want to ride along."
"You kidding? Go out in that muck when I don't have to? Hell." "All right, I guess."
He started levering himself out of his chair.
"Sit down, Willow," Mather said. "I'll go. I'm in better shape than you are."
Swan said,
"You talked me into it, you smooth-talking son of a bitch. I don't know how you do it, you golden-tongued bastard. You can get anything you want out of me. Be careful."
"Ready?" Mather asked me. He stifled a small smile. "Yeah." We went out and climbed onto the horses, who were beginning to look a little put upon. I led out, but Shadid soon slipped past, suggesting he lead since he knew whence they had come. The day was getting on. The light was feeble. It was about as dreary as it could get. More to distract myself than because I cared, I told Murgan, "Better explain what's going on."
"Cordy can tell you better than me. I just stuck with them."
The Roy was not setting a blistering pace. I fought down the growls breeding in my gut.
It kept telling me she was a big girl and she'd been taking care of herself since before I was born. But the man in me kept saying, "That's your woman. You got to take care of her."
Sure.
Cordy, I know you guys don't work for me and you got your own priorities, but nothing to cover up, Captain. Word came that some of you guys was going to ride out. That boggled the woman. She figured you all to make a break for the Main in a mob and learn about the Shadow Masters the hard way. Instead, you went to scout it. She didn't think you were that smart.
We're talking about the old broad you guys brought down to the river, right? The Radisha?
Yeah, we call her the Woman. Blade hung it on her before we knew who she was. And she knew we were headed out before we went.
Interesting. This is a wondrous time of my life, Mr. Mather. For the last year, everybody in the world has known what I was going to do before I did it. It's enough to make a guy nervous.
We passed some trees. In one, I spied this incredibly bedraggled crow. I laughed and hoped aloud he was as miserable as me. The others eyed me uncertainly. I wondered if I shouldn't start cultivating a new image, work it up slowly. All the world dreads a madman, if I played it right.
Hey, Cordy, old traveling buddy, you sure you don't know anything about those little brown guys?
All I know is they tried to ice us when we was headed north. Nobody ever saw anybody like them before. They figure to be out of the Shadowlands.
Why are the Shadow Masters paranoid about us?
I did not expect an answer. I did not get one.
Cordy, you guys really serious about winning it for the Prabhrindra?
I am. For Taglios.
I found something there I never found anywhere else.
Willow, too. Though you could roast him and never get it out of him.
I don't know about Blade. I guess he's in because we're in. He's got 1.5 friends in the world and nothing else to live for. He's just going on.
1.5?
Willow he's got. I'm the half. We pulled him out when somebody threw him to the crocodiles. He stuck because he owed us a life. After what we've been through since then, if you was keeping accounts, you couldn't figure who owes who what anymore. I can't tell you about the real Blade. He never lets you see that.
What are we into? Or is that something you figure you shouldn't tell me?
What?
There's more going on than your woman and the Prabhrindra trying to get us to keep the Shadow Masters out. Otherwise, they'd make a straight deal instead of trying to con us.
We traveled a mile while he thought. He finally said, "I don't know for sure. I think they're doing the way they are because of the way the Black Company did Taglios before."
I thought so, and we don't know what our four brethren did, and no one will tell us. It's like one giant conspiracy where everybody in Taglios won't tell us anything. In a city that big, you'd think I'd find one guy with an axe to grind.
You'd find platoons if you looked in the right place. All them priests spend their lives looking to cut each other's throats.
He had given me something there. I wasn't sure what.
I'll keep it in mind. I don't know if I can handle priests, though.
They're like any other guys if you get your bluff in.
The gloom closed in tighter as the day advanced. I was so soaked I no longer paid that much attention.
We hit a stretch where we had to go single file. Cordy and Mergen dropped back.
"I picked up a few things I'll tell you about later,"
Mergen said before he went.
I moved up behind the Roy to ask how much farther. It was just the misery of the day, but I felt like I'd been traveling for weeks.
Something whipped across our path so suddenly that that unflappable mount of Shadid's reared and whinnied. He shouted, "What the hell was that?" in his native tongue. I understood because I'd learned a few words when I was a kid. I caught only a glimpse. It looked like a monster gray wolf with a deformed pup clinging to its back. It vanished before my eye could track it.
Do wolves do that? Carry their young on their backs?
I laughed, almost hysterically. Why worry about that when I ought to be wondering if there was such a thing as a wolf the size of a pony? Mergen and Cordy caught up and wanted to know what had happened. I said I didn't know because I was no longer sure I had seen what I had seen. But the wonder lay back there in the shadows of my mind, ripening. Shadid stopped 2 miles past the place where we'd been ambushed originally. It was getting hard to see. He peered around, trying to read landmarks. He grunted, moved out to his left, off the road. I spied signs suggesting this was the way he had come with Otto and Hagop. After another half mile, the ground dropped into a small valley where a narrow creek ran. Rocks stuck up seemingly at random. Likewise, trees grew in scatters. It was now so dark I could not see more than 20 feet. We started finding bodies. A lot of little brown men had died for their cause, whatever that was. Shadid stopped again.
"We led them in from the other direction. Here's where we split. We went up that way. The others held on to give us a head start."
He dismounted, began snooping around. The light was almost gone before he found the track out of the valley. It was full dark before we covered a mile. Mergen said,
"Maybe we ought to go back and wait. We can't accomplish much stumbling around in the dark."
"You go back if you want," I snapped, with a savagery that surprised me. "I'm staying till I find..." I could not see him, but I suspected he was grinning through his misery. He said, "Maybe we shouldn't split up. That much more trouble getting everybody back together." Riding through the night in unfamiliar territory is not one of the smarter things I've done, especially with a horde out there that wanted to do me harm. But the gods take care of fools, I guess. Our mounts stopped, their ears pricked. After a moment, mine made a sound. A moment later still, that sound was repeated from our left quarter. Without being urged, the animals turned that way. We found Sindawe and the man he'd brought in a crude bough shelter, their mounts hanging around outside. Both were injured, Sindawe the worst. We talked briefly while I did some stitching and patching and bandaging. Lady had ordered them to disappear. Goblin had covered for them while the pursuit went on off to the southeast. They had planned to head north in the morning. I told them where to meet up, then got back into my saddle. I was dead on my butt, barely able to stay upright, but something made me go on. Something I did not want to examine too closely, lest I have to mock myself for my sentiment. I got no arguments, though I think Mather was getting a little unsure of my sanity. I heard him whispering with Mergen, and Mergen telling him to can it. I took the lead and gave my horse his head, telling him to find Lady's mount. I'd never determined how intelligent the beasts were, but it seemed worth a try. And the animal went walking, though his pace was a little slow to suit me. I don't know how long the ride went on. There was no way to estimate time. After a while, I began drifting off and coming awake with a start, then drifting off again. Near as I could tell, the others were doing the same thing. I could have raised hell with them and me both, but that would have been unreasonable. Reasonable men would have been in a warm room back at that village, snoring. I was about half awake when the crest of a hill half a mile ahead burst into flames. It was like an explosion. One moment darkness, the next several acres ablaze and men and animals scattering, burning too. The smell of sorcery was so strong I could detect it. "Go, horse!" There was light enough for it to risk a trot. A minute later, I was moving over ground dotted by smoldering, twitching bodies. Little brown men. One hell of a lot of little brown men. The flaming trees illuminated a racing silhouette, a gigantic wolf with a smaller wolf astride, clinging with paws and claws. "What the hell is that?" Mather demanded. Mergen guessed. "That shifter, Croker." "Maybe. Probably. We know he's around somewhere." "Lady!" I yelled it at the burning trees. The fire was dying in the drizzle. A sound that might have been an answer slithered through the crackling. "Where are you?"
"Here."
Something moved amidst an outcrop of small rocks. I jumped down.
"Goblin, where the hell are you?"
No goblin. Just Lady.
and now not enough light to see how badly she was hurt. And hurt she was, no doubt about that. A fool damned thing to do, and me a physician who ought to know better. But I sat down and pulled her into my lap and held her, rocking her like a baby. The mind goes. From the minute you sign on with the company, you're doing things that make no sense. Drills and practices and rehearsals, so that when the crunch comes, you'll do the right thing automatically, without thought. The mind goes. I was without thought of anything but loss. I did not do the right thing. I was lucky. I had companions whose brains had not turned to mud. They got together enough burnable wood to get a fire started, got me my gear, and with a little judicious yelling, got me to stop fussing and start doing. She wasn't as bad off as she'd seemed in the dark. A few cuts, a lot of bruises, maybe a concussion to account for her grogginess. The old battlefield reflexes took over. I became a military physician again. Mergen joined me after a while. I found her horse. No sign of Goblin, though. How is she? Better than she looks. Banged around some, but nothing critical. She'll hurt all over for a while. About then, her eyelids fluttered. She looked up at me and recognized me. She threw herself at me, wrapped her arms around me, and started crying. Shadid said something. Mergen chuckled. "Yeah, let's see if we can find Goblin." Cordy Mather was a beat slow, but he got it and went away, too. She settled down quickly. She was who she was, and was not in the habit of yielding to her emotions. She peeled herself off me. "Excuse me, Croker." "Nothing to excuse. You had a close call." "What happened?" "I was going to ask you." "They had me. They had me dead, Croker. I thought we'd given them the slip, but they knew right where we were. They split us apart and ran me up here, and there must have been a dozen of them sneaking around, jumping in on me and jumping away. They were trying to capture me, not kill me. Guess I should be glad. Otherwise, I'd be dead. But there's some time missing. I don't remember you showing up and running them off." "I didn't. Near as I can tell, Shifter saved you." I told her about the sudden fire and the wolf. "Maybe. I didn't know he was around." "Where's Goblin?" "I don't know. We split about a mile from here. He tried to baffle them with illusions. We must have killed 100 of those men today, Croker. I never saw anybody so inept. But they never stopped coming. When we tried to outrun them, there were always more in ambush, no matter which way we went. If we tried to fight, they always outnumbered us, and 2 more turned up for every 1 we killed. It was a nightmare. They always knew where we were." She snuggled in close again. "There had to be some kind of sorcery involved. I was never so scared. It's all right now. It's over." It was the best I could think to say. Now that my nerves were settled, I was intensely aware of her as a woman. What appeared to be lightning flashed to the east, several miles away. But there had been no lightning running with this petty drizzle. I heard Shadid and Mergen and Mather yelling at each other, then the sounds of their mounts moving away. "That's got to be Goblin," I said, and started to get up. She tightened her grip, held me down. "They can handle it, Croker." I looked down. It did not take much light to show me what was in her face. "Yeah, I guess they can." After a moment's hesitation, I did what she wanted. As the breathing got heavier, I broke away and said, "You're not in any shape for..." "Shut up, Croker." I shut up and paid attention to business. Chapter 28. Back to Scouting. The pinhead gods had other ideas. I'm not a swift worker, and Lady had her natural reluctances, and all of a sudden the sky opened up like somebody chopped open the bellies of the clouds. The downpour was heavy and cold, and came with just a breath or two of chill wind for warning. I'd have thought I was already wet enough not to mind more, but... We'd hardly stopped scrambling around trying to find some shelter when Mergen and the others came out of the night. Mergen said, "It was Goblin, all right, but he was gone when we got there. He assumed I knew what he was talking about.
Croker, I know us Black Company types is tough He-Man, and neither rain nor snow nor little brown geeks is supposed to stop us from doing any damn thing we want, but I'm burned out on this rain. I guess I got what you call conditioned at the Barrowland. I can't handle too much of it. I get the collie wobbles. I was burned out on it, too, especially now it was coming down serious. But what about Goblin?
What about him?
I'll make you a bet, Croker. That little dork is all right. Goddamned well better off than we are, eh? This is where command really gets you. When you make a choice that feels like you're taking the easy way out. When you think you are taking convenience over obligation.
Right then, let's see if we can't find our way back to town. I let go Lady's hand. We got ourselves in better array. Those guys pretended not to notice. I supposed the troops back in Taglios would know before sunrise, somehow. Rumor works that way. Damn, I wished I was guilty as suspected.
We reached the village as the world began to turn gray. Even those fabulous mounts of ours were worn out. We boot-horned them into a stable meant for half a dozen normal animals and went clumping inside. I was sure the owner would be thrilled to death to see his clientele expanded again and looking like they'd just spent the night rolling around in the mud. The old boy wasn't around. Instead, a pudgy little woman appeared from the kitchen, looked at us like she thought the barbarians had invaded, then saw Lady. Lady looked just as rough as the rest of us, just as mean, but there was no mistaking her for a guy. The old gal rushed her and babbled in Taglian and reached up to pat her back, and I didn't need Cordy to tell me she was doing an "Oh, you poor dear" routine. We followed them back into the kitchen. And there was friend Goblin, leaning back with his feet up on a log in front of a fire, sipping something from a huge mug. "Get the little bastard," Mergen said, and started after him. Goblin bounced up and squeaked, "Croker! Where you been, Runt? Sitting here drinking toddies while we're out stomping in the mud trying to save your butt from the baddies, eh?" Mergen got him cornered. "Hey, no, I just got here myself." "Where's your horse? The stable was one short when we put ours in." "It's pretty miserable out there. I left it back and came straight inside."
"It's not miserable for a horse. Mergen, throw him out, and don't let him back inside till he takes care of his horse." Not that we had done all that decent a job ourselves, but at least we'd gotten them in out of the wet. "Cordy, when the old gal finishes fussing over Lady, ask her how far it is to the main."
"The main? You're not still..."
"I'm still. As soon as I get some chow inside me and a couple hours of sleep. It's what I came down for, and it's what I'm going to do. Your pals have been running a game on us, whatever their reasons, and I don't like it. If I can take the company on without getting drafted into somebody's fight, I'm going to do it." He sort of smiled. "All right. If you have to see for yourself, see for yourself. But be careful." Goblin came in, looking sheepish and conciliatory and wet.
"Where are you going now, Croker?"
"Where we were going in the first place, the river."
"Maybe I can save you the trouble."
"I doubt it. But let's hear it. You find out something while you were adventuring on your own?" His eyes narrowed. "Sorry, it wasn't one of my all-time best nights."
"You're having a lot of not-so-good times in recent years, Croker. Being captain gives you a sour stomach."
"Yeah." We exchanged stares. I won the look down. He said,
"After Lady and I split up, I only got about half a mile before I realized them brown guys weren't being fooled. I knew I did a good job with the illusion. If they didn't all come after me, then they had some mojo of their own somewhere. I already suspected they did on account of how they stuck all the time, even when we outran them. So I figured if I couldn't get back to Lady, I'd do the next best thing and go after whoever was controlling and guiding them. When I started sniffing around for it, it was damned easy to find. And they gave me no trouble. I guess they figured if I would go away from Lady, they'd leave me alone. Only a few stuck with me. I turned on them and uncorked a few specials I was saving for the next time one eye got out of line, and after they all stopped kicking, I buzzed over there and sneaked up, and there was this hilltop that had been sort of hollowed out, like a bowl, and down in the bowl there was these six guys all facing a little fire. Only there was something weird. You couldn't see them right. It was like you was looking at them through a fog. Only the fog was black, sort of. Lots of little shadows, I guess you'd call them. Some of them no bigger than a mouse's shadow, all buzzing around like bees.
He was talking as fast as his mouth would go, yet I knew he was having trouble telling what he had seen. That words for what he wanted to convey did not exist, at least in any languages us mundanes would understand.
I think they were seeing what we were doing in the flames, then sending those shadows out to tell their boys what to do to us and how to get into our way.
Huh?
Maybe you were lucky not dealing with them so much in the daytime.
Right. I figured I'd had troubles enough chasing a walking tree stump around the countryside. See any crows while you were at it? He looked at me funny.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. See, I was laying there in the mud looking at these guys, trying to figure out what I had in the trick bag that I could smack them with, and all of a sudden there's about 20 crows swooping around. The whole thing blew up like it was raining naphtha instead of water. Cooked those brown guys good. Only those crows maybe weren't crows. You know what I mean?
Not till you tell me.
I only saw them for a second, but it seemed like I could see right through them.
You always do, I muttered, and he looked at me weird again. So you figure any of the brown guys who are still out there are wandering around lost now, like puppies without their masters?
I wouldn't say that. I figure they're as smart as you or me. Well, as smart as you, anyway. They just don't have their advantage anymore.
The old woman was still fussing over Lady. She had taken her somewhere to get bathed and patched up, as if she needed patching. How does this save me a trip to the main?
I'm not finished yet, your grand impatience. Right after the blow-up here came one of the guys I thought I'd finished, tracking me down, all on his lonesome, and he's stumbling around, holding his head like something got ripped out. I grabbed him, and I grabbed a couple loose shadows that were hanging around, and I slapped one of them around a little and sent it off to tell One Eye I needed to borrow his little beast. I taught another shadow how to make a guy talk, and when the little monster showed up, we asked the brown guy a few hundred questions.
Frog Face is here?
He went back. Mogaba's got them working their butts off up there.
Good for him. You asked questions. You got answers?
Not that made much sense. These little brown guys come from a burg called Shadow Catch, specifically out of some kind of super fortress called Overlook. Their boss is one of the Shadow Masters. Long Shadow, they call him. He gave the shadows to the six guys that was in the bowl place. These were just wimpy little shadows, not good for much, but carrying messages. They supposedly got bad ones they can turn loose, too.
We're having some fun now, aren't we? You find out what's going on.
This Long Shadow is up to something. He's in with the whole bunch trying to keep the company away. The brown guys didn't know why they're worried, but he's running a game on his own, too. The impression I got was he wanted them to capture you and Lady and have you dragged down to his castle, where he was going to make some kind of deal, maybe. And that's about it.
I had 500 questions, and I started asking them, but Goblin didn't have the answers. The man he had interrogated hadn't had them. Most of the questions had occurred to him. He asked,
"So, are you going down to the main?"
"You haven't changed my mind. Neither have those brown runts. If they don't have their mojo men anymore, they won't give me much trouble, will they?" Goblin groaned.
"Probably not.
So what's the matter?"
"You think I'm going to let you ride out there without some kind of cover? I'm groaning about the state of my butt."
He grinned his big frog grin. I grinned back. According to our hosts, it was a 4-hour ride to the Goja Ford, the nearest and best crossing over the main. Swan said there were four along an 80-mile stretch of the main: Teri, Numa, Goja, and Vedna Bota, Teri being the farthest upriver. Above Terry, the main coursed through rugged canyons too steep and bleak for military operations, though Goblin said our little brown friends had come that way to evade the attention of the other Shadow Masters. They had lost a third of their number making the journey. Vedna Bota lay nearest the sea and was useful only during the driest months of the year. The 80 miles of river between Vedna Bota and the sea were always impassable. Both Vedna Bota and Terry Fords took their names from Taglian villages that had been abandoned when the Shadow Masters had invaded last year. They remained empty. Numa and Goja were villages below the main, formerly Taglian, now occupied. Goja appeared to be the critical crossing, and Swan, Mather, and Blade had all seen it. They told me what they could. I asked about the other fords and made an amusing discovery. Each was unfamiliar with at least one. Huh. Me and Goblin will scout the Goja crossing. Mergen, you and Cordy check out Vedna Bota. Shadid, you and Swan go to Numa. Sindawe, you and Blade check out Terry. I was sending each of the three into strange country. Cordy laughed. Swan scowled. And Blade... well, I wonder if you could get a reaction out of Blade by sticking his feet in a fire. We split up. Lady, Otto, Hagop, and Sindawi's men all stayed behind to recuperate. Goblin rode beside me, but did not say much after he hoped the weather would not go sour again. He did not sound like he expected the drizzle to hold off. Swan said he had heard the Shadow Masters were fortifying the south bank of the Goja Ford, another indication the enemy would put his main force over there. I hoped it would come out that way. On the maps, the terrain looked very favorable. 2 hours after we split, the drizzle resumed. Perfect weather for the dreary thoughts tramping my brain. Despite my adventure yesterday, it seemed forever since I had been alone long enough to think a thought through. So with Goblin still as the grave, I expected to do some serious brooding about where Lady and I were going. But she hardly crossed my mind. Instead, I mulled over what I'd gotten me and the company into. I was in charge, but not in control. As far back as that monastery, things had been happening that I could not control and could not unravel into sense. Geasli and the river worsened matters. Now I felt like driftwood tumbling through a rapid. I had only the slightest idea who was doing what to whom and why, but I was locked into the middle of it, unless this last frantic gesture showed me an out. For all I knew, if I let the Prabhrindra suck me in, I would be enlisting on the wrong side. Now I knew how the captain felt when Soulcatcher dragged us into the ladies' service. We were fighting in the Forsberg campaigns before the rest of us began to suspect we'd made a mistake. It is not necessary for mercenary soldiers to know what is going on. It is sufficient for them to do the job for which they have taken the gold. That had been drummed into me from the moment I enlisted. There is neither right nor wrong, neither good nor evil, only our side and theirs. The honor of the company lies within, directed one brother toward another. Without, honor lies only in keeping faith with the sponsor. Nothing I knew of the company's experiences resembled our present circumstance. For the first time, mainly by my doing, we were fighting for ourselves first. Our contract, if we accepted it, would be coincidental to our own desires. A tool. If I kept my head and perspective as I should, Taglios and all Taglians would become instruments of our desires. Yet I doubted. I liked what I had seen of the Taglian people, and especially liked their spirit. After the wounds they had taken keeping their independence, they were still fired up for the Shadow Masters. And I had a good notion I wouldn't like those fools if I got to know them. So before it was fairly begun, I'd broken the prime rule and become emotionally involved. Fool that I am. That damned rain had a personal grudge. It got no heavier, but it never let up. Yet to east and west, I saw light that indicated clear skies in those directions. The gods, if such existed, were laying on the misery especially for me. The last tenanted place we passed lay 6 miles from the Goja Ford. Beyond, the countryside had been abandoned. It had been empty for months. It was not bad land, either. The locals must have had a big fear on to uproot and flee. A change of overlords usually isn't that traumatic for peasants. The 5,000 who had come north and not returned must have had a real way about them. The country was not rugged. It was mostly cleared land that rolled gently, and the road was not awful, considering, though it had not been built to carry military traffic. Nowhere did I see any fortifications, man-made or natural. I'd seen none of the former anywhere in the Taglian territory. There would be no place to run and few places to hide in the event of disaster. I became a bit more respectful of Swan and his buddies, daring what they had. The ground, when soaked, became a clayey, clinging mud that exercised the strength and patience even of my tireless steed. Note to the chief of staff, plan our battles for clear, dry days. Right. And while we're at it, let's order up only blind enemies. You have to take what is handed you in this trade.
You're damned broody today, Croker, Goblin said after a long while.
Me? You've been chattering like a stone yourself.
I'm troubled about all this.
He was troubled. That was a very un-goblin-like remark. It meant he was worried right down to his toenails. You don't think we can handle it if we have to take the commission? He shook his head.
I don't know. Maybe.
You always grab something out of the trick bag.
But we're getting worn out, Croker. There's no zest in it anymore.
What if we did pull it off, and broke through, and got to Katovar, and ended up with a big nothing? That's been the risk since we started. I never claimed anything for this trip. It's just something I thought had to be done because I pledged to do it. And when I turn the annals over to Mergen, I'll extract the same oath from him.
I guess we don't have anything better to do.
To the end of the world and back again? It's an accomplishment of sorts.
I wonder about the first purpose.
So do I, old friend. It got lost somewhere between here and Geazli, and I think these Taglians know something about it, but they're not talking. Going to have to try some old-fashioned company double shuffle on them sometime. The drizzle had its good side, I suppose. It lessened visibility. We were over the last crest and headed down toward the main and Goja Ford before I realized we had come that far. Sentries on the south bank would have spotted us immediately in better weather. Goblin sensed it first.
We're there, Croker. The river's right down there.
We reined in.
I asked, "You feel anything on the other side?"
People? Not alert, but there's a couple poor fools on sentry duty.
What kind of outfit does it feel like?
Sloppy. Third rate. I could get a better look if I had a little time.
Take some time. I'm going to roam around and look it over. The site was what I had been told it would be. The road wandered down a long, bare slope to the ford, which lay just above an elbow in the river. Below the elbow, a creek ran into the river from my side, though I had to go make sure because it lay behind higher ground. The creek had a beard of the usual growth along both banks. There was also a slight rise in the other direction, so that the road to the ford ran down the center of a slight concavity. Above the ford, the river arched southward in a slow, lazy curve. On my side, its bank was anywhere from 2 to 8 feet high, and overgrown with trees and brush everywhere but at the crossing itself. I examined all that very carefully, on foot, while my mount waited with Goblin beyond the ridge. I sneaked down to the edge of the fort itself and spent a half hour sitting in the wet bushes staring at the fortifications on the other side. We were not going to get across here. Not easily.
Were they worried about us coming to them? Why?
I used the old triangulation trick to figure out that the watchtower of the fortress stood about 70 feet high, then withdrew and tried to calculate what could be seen from its parapet. Most of the light was gone when I finished.
"Find out what you need to know,"
Goblin asked when I rejoined him.
"I think so. Not what I wanted, either.
unless you can cheer me up. Could we force a crossing?
Against what's in there now?
Probably, with the water down, if we tried in the dead of night and caught them napping.
And when the water does go down, they'll have 10,000 men hanging around over there.
Don't look good, does it?
No. Let's find a place to get out of the rain.
I can stand to ride back if you can.
Let's try. We'll sleep dry if we make it. What do you think of the men over there? Professionals?
My guess is they're just a little better than men disguised as soldiers.
They look pretty sloppy to me, too. But maybe they don't have to be any better in these parts. I had seen and watched four men while I was crouching near the ford. They had not impressed me. Neither had the design or construction of the fortifications. Clearly, these shadow masters had brought in no professionals to train their forces, and they had not developed a good edge on what they did have.
Of course, maybe we saw what we were supposed to see.
There's always that. An interesting thought, maybe worth some consideration, because at that moment I noticed a couple of bedraggled crows watching us from a dead branch on an elm tree. I started to look around for the stump, thought, the hell with it. I would handle that when the time came.
You remember Shifter's woman, Goblin?
Yeah, so?
You said you thought she seemed familiar back in Geasli. Now it's all of a sudden coming on me that maybe you were right. I'm sure we ran into her somewhere before, but I can't for the life of me think where or when.
Does it matter?
Probably not. Just one of those things that nag at you. Let's cut off to the left here.
What the hell for?
There's a town on the map called Vejagedya that I want to look at.
I thought we were going back.
It'll only take a few minutes extra.
Right.
Grumble, grumble, raggle snats. Looks like we might have to fight. I need to know the country.
Fraggan, Snigglebark.
We ate cold food as we rode. It is not often that I do so, but at such moments I sometimes envy the man with a cottage and wife. Everything costs something. It was ghost country we rode, spooky country. The hand of man was evident everywhere, even in darkness. Some of the homes we inspected looked like they had been closed up only yesterday, but not once did we encounter another human being. I'm surprised thieves haven't been working all this.
Don't tell One Eye.
I forced a chuckle. I guess they were smart enough to take their valuables with them.
These people do seem determined to pay whatever price they have to, don't they?
He sounded impressed. Grudgingly, I was developing a case of respect. And it looks like the company is going to be their one toss of the bones with fate.
If you let them.
There was the town, Vejagedya. It might once have been home to as many as 1,000 people. Now it was even more spooky than the abandoned farms. Out there, at least, we had encountered wildlife. In the town, I saw nothing but a few crows fluttering from roof to roof. The townsfolk had not locked their doors. We checked maybe 24 buildings. It would do for a headquarters, I told Goblin. He grunted. After a while, he asked,
"You making up your mind?"
Beginning to look made up for me, right? But we'll see what the others have to say. We headed north. Goblin did not have much to say after that. That gave me time to dwell on and invent deeper meanings to my roles as captain and potential warlord. If there was no choice but to fight and to lead a nation, I was going to make demands. I was not going to let the Taglians put me in a position where they could second-guess and override my every decision. I had watched my predecessors get half-crazy dealing with that. If the Taglians hooked me, I was going to hook them right back. We might call it something prettier, but by damn, I was going to be a military dictator. Me, Croker, the itinerant military physician and amateur historian, able to indulge in all the abuses I'd damned in princes for so long. It was a sobering notion. If we bought it and took the commission, and I got what I would demand, I might have Weezer follow me around and remind me that I'm mortal. He wasn't good for much else. The rain let up as we were riding into town. Now I knew the gods loved me.
Chapter 29 Smoke's Hideout. Smoke was perched on a tall stool, bent over a huge old book. The room was filled with books. It looked like a wave of books had swept in and left tidal pools behind. Not only were there shelves dripping books, there were books stacked hip-high on the floor, books on tables and chairs, even books piled on the sill of the room's one small, high window. Smoke read by the light of a single candle. The room was sealed so tight the smoke had begun to irritate his nose and eyes. From time to time he grunted, made a note on a piece of paper to his left. He was left-handed. In all the palace, that room was the best protected from spying eyes. Smoke had woven webs and walls of spells to secure it. No one was supposed to know about it. It did not show on any plan of the palace. Smoke felt something touch the outermost of the protective spells, something as light as a mosquito's weight as it lands. Before he could swing his attention to it, it was gone, and he was not sure he had not imagined it. Since the incident of the crows and bats, he had been almost paranoid. Intuition told him he had reason. There were forces at work that were way beyond him. His best weapon was the fact that no one knew he existed. He hoped. He was a very frightened man these days. Terror lurked in every shadow. He jumped and squeaked when the door opened.
Smoke?
You startled me, Radisha.
Where are they, Smoke?
There's been no word from Swan. Have they gotten away?
Leaving most of their people behind. Radisha, be patient.
I have no patience left. Even my brother is becoming unsettled. We have only weeks left before the rivers fall.
I'm aware of that, madam. Concentrate on what you can do, not what you wish you could do. Every force possible is being bent upon them, but we cannot compel them to help.
The Radisha kicked over a pile of books.
I've never felt so powerless. I don't like the feeling.
Smoke shrugged.
Welcome to the world where the rest of us live.
In a high corner of the room, a point no bigger than a pinprick oozed something like a black smoke. The smoke slowly filled out the shape of a small crow.
What are the rest of them doing?
Making preparations for war, in case.
I wonder, that black officer, Mogaba, could he be the real captain?
No. Why?
He's doing the things I want them to do. He's acting like they're going to serve us.
It makes sense, Radisha. If their captain comes back convinced they can't sneak away, they'll be that much farther ahead.
Has he made preparations to run back north?
Of course.
The Radisha looked vexed. Smoke smiled.
Have you considered being forthright with them?
She gave him a look to chill the bones.
I thought not. Not the way of princes. Too simple, too direct, too logical, too honest.
You grow too daring, Smoke.
Perhaps I do, though I recall my mandate from your brother is to remind you occasionally.
Enough.
They are what they pretend to be, you know. Wholly ignorant of their past.
I'm aware of that. It makes no difference. They could become what they were if we let them. Sooner bend the knee to the Shadow Masters than endure that again.
Smoke shrugged.
As you will, maybe.
He smiled slyly.
And as the Shadow Masters will, perhaps.
You know something.
I am constrained by my need to remain unnoticed, but I've been able to catch glimpses of our northern friends. They have fallen afoul of more of our little friends from the river. Ferocious things are happening down near the main.
Sorcery?
High magnitude. Recalling that which manifested during their passage through the pirate swamps. I no longer dare intrude.
Damn. Are they all right? Have we lost them?
I no longer dare intrude. Time will tell.
The Radisha kicked another pile of books. Smoke's bland expression cracked, became one of intense irritation. She apologized.
It's frustration.
We are all frustrated. Perhaps you would be less so if you adjusted your ambitions.
What do you mean?
Perhaps if you followed the course your brother has charted, and aimed to climb but one mountain at a time.
Bah! Am I, a woman, the only rooster around here?
You, a woman, will not be required to pay the price of failure. That will come out of your brother's purse.
Damn you, Smoke! Why are you always right?
That is my commission. Go to your brother. Talk. Recalculate. Concentrate on the enemy of the moment. The Shadow Masters must be turned now. The priests will be here forever, unless you want shut of them badly enough to let the Shadow Masters win, of course.
If I could frame just one high priest for treason...
All right, I know. The Shadow Masters have shown they know what to do with clerics. Nobody would believe it. I'm going. If you dare, find out what's happening down there. If we've lost them, we'll have to move quickly. That damned Swan had to go after them, didn't he?
You sent him.
Why does everybody do what I tell them? Some of the things I say are stupid. Get that grin off your face.
Smoke failed.
Kick over another stack of books.
The Radisher huffed out of the room.
Smoke sighed. Then he returned to his reading.
The book's author lingered lovingly over impalements and flayings and tortures visited on a generation unlucky enough to have lived when the free companies of Katovar marched out of that strange corner of the world that spawned them. The books in that room had been confiscated so they would not fall into the hands of the Black Company. Smoke did not believe their being there would keep secrets forever, but maybe long enough for him to find a way to prevent the sort of bloodshed that had occurred in olden times. Maybe. The best hope, though, lay in the probability that the company had mutated with time, that it was not wearing a mask, that it had indeed forgotten its grim origins, and its search for its past was more a reflex than the determined return that other companies, come back earlier, had made. In the back of Smoke's mind, always, was the temptation to take his own advice, to bring the company's captain in and turn him loose on the books, if only to see how he responded to the truth.
Chapter 30. Taglios Aroused. We approached Taglios with the dawn, days late, all of us at the brink of collapse. Swan and his buddies may be worse off than the rest. Their mundane mounts were wiped out. I asked Swan, "You figure the Prebrindra will be overly pissed because I didn't keep my appointment?" Swan still had a little pepper left.
"What the hell can he do? Put a bug down your shirt? He'll swallow it and smile. You worry about the woman. She's the one who'll give you trouble, if anybody does. She don't always think right."
"Priests," Blade said.
"Yeah, watch out for the priests. They sprung this whole thing on them the day you guys landed. They couldn't do anything but go along. But they've been thinking about it, you can bet your butt. And when they find them an angle, they're going to start messing."
"What's Blade's thing with priests?"
"I don't know. I don't want to know. But I've been down here long enough to start thinking maybe he's right. The world might be better off if we drowned some of them."
One thing that made the military situation wonderfully impossible was the absence of fortifications. Taglios itself sprawled everywhere, without a thought to defense. A people with centuries of pacifism behind them. An enemy with experienced armies and high-power sorcerers to support them. And me, with maybe a month to figure out how to help the former whip the latter. Impossible. When those rivers went down so troops could cross, the massacre would be on.
Swan asked, "You make up your mind what you're going to do?"
"Yeah. The Prebrindra isn't going to like it either." That surprised him. I did not explain. Let them worry. I took my bunch into the barracks and sent Swan off to announce our return. As we dismounted, with half the company hanging around waiting to hear something, Mergen said, "I guess Goblin's made up his mind." Something had been preying on the little wizard. He had been broody and curt all the way home. Now he was grinning. He gave special attention to his saddlebags. Mogaba joined me.
"We've made major progress while you were gone, Captain. I'll report when you feel up to it."
His question remained unspoken. I saw no need to leave it hanging. "We can't sneak through. They've got us. It's fight or turn back."
"Then there is no option, is there?"
"I guess there never was, but I had to see for myself." He nodded his understanding. Before business, I tended wounds. Lady was coming back fast. Her bruises, though, did nothing to make her more attractive. I felt odd examining her. She had had little to say since our night in the rain. She was doing a lot of thinking again. Mogaba had a lot to tell me about discussions with Taglios's religious leaders and his ideas for putting together the pretense of an army. I could find nothing in his suggestions I disapproved. He said, "There's one other thing. A priest named Jahamaraj Ja, number two man in the Shada cult. He has a daughter he thinks is dying. It looks like a chance to make a friend."
"Or get somebody thoroughly pissed. Never underestimate the power of human ingratitude."
"One Eye saw her."
I looked at the little witch doctor. He said,
"Looked like her appendix to me, Croker. Not that far gone yet, either. But these clowns around here don't have the foggiest. They're trying to exorcise demons."
"I haven't opened anybody up in years. How long before it bursts?"
"Another day, at least, unless she's unlucky. I did what I could for the pain."
"I'll check it on the way back from the palace. Make me a map." "No, you'd better tag along. You might be useful."
Mogaba and I were getting dressed for a court appearance now. Lady was supposed to be doing the same. Swan, not at all improved in appearance, showed up to take us to the prince. I did not feel like doing anything but take a nap. I sure did not feel up to the games of politicians. But I went. The people of Trogo Taglios had heard that the moment of decision had come. They were in the streets to watch us. They remained eerily silent. I saw dread in all those watching eyes, but hope, too. They were aware of the risks, and maybe even of the odds against them. A pity they did not realize that a battlefield is not a wrestling ring. Once a child cried. I shivered, hoping it was not an omen. As we neared the Trogo, an old man stepped out of the crowd and pressed something into my hand. He bowed himself away. It was a company badge from olden times. An officer's badge, perhaps booty from some forgotten battle. I fixed it near the badge I wore already, the fire-breathing death's head of Soul Catcher, which we had retained, though we no longer served the Taken or the Empire. Lady and I had outfitted ourselves in our finest, meaning I wore my legate's duds and she her imperial rig. We impressed the mob. Beside us, Mogaba looked drab. One Eye looked like a derelict scraped off the bottom of the worst dive in the worst slum. That damned hat. He was as happy as a snail. Showmanship, Lady had told me. An old maxim of my own, albeit directed somewhat differently. In politics and battle, our big weapon will have to be showmanship. She was coming to life. I think those brown guys pissed her off. She was right. Showmanship and craft, even more than traditionally, would have to be our tools. If we were to meet and beat the veteran armies commanded by the Shadow Masters, we would have to gain our triumphs inside the imaginations of enemy soldiers. It takes ages to create a force with the self-confidence to go slug it out despite the odds. Despite our being late, the Prabhrindra Dra was a gracious host. He treated us to a dinner the likes of which I have no hope of seeing again. Afterward, he laid on the entertainment. Dancing girls, sword swallowers, illusionists, musicians whose work my ear found too alien to appreciate. He was in no hurry to get to an answer of which he was confident. During the afternoon, Swan introduced me to several score of Taglios's leading men, including Jahamaraj Ja. I told Ja I would look at his daughter as soon as I could. The gratitude in the man's face was embarrassing. Otherwise, I paid no attention to those men. I had no intention of dealing with or through them. The time came. We were invited out of the crowd into a private chamber. Because I had brought two of my lieutenants, the Prabhrindra did the same. One was that codger Smoke, whom the prince introduced by title. That translated out as Lord of the Guardians of Public Safety, and that turned out to mean he was boss of the city fire brigade. Only one eye failed to keep a straight face. The Prabhrindra's other lieutenant was his enigmatic sister. Put them together, and it was obvious she was older and probably tougher than he. Even dressed up, she looked like she had been ridden hard and put away wet. When the Prabhrindra asked about my companions, I introduced Mogaba as my commander of infantry and Lady as my chief of staff. The idea of a woman soldier amazed him. I wondered how much more amazed he would be if he knew her history. She concealed surprise at the designation, as much for her benefit as the Prabhrindra's. I said, "There's nobody in the company more qualified, with the possible exception of the captain. Each post is filled on merit." Swan was doing the translating. He skirted the edge of the Prabhrindra's reply, which I think actually suggested limited agreement. His sister seemed to be his brain trust. "To the point," I told Swan. "Time is too tight if we're going to stop an invasion." Swan smiled. "Then you're going to accept the commission?" "You never doubted it for a second, you jackal." "Don't get your hopes too high, man. I'm going to make a counter-offer. Its terms won't be negotiable." Swan's smile vanished. "I don't understand." "I've looked at the land. I've talked with my people. Despite the lay, most of them want to go on. We know what we have to do to get to Katovar, meaning we'll consider doing the job your prince wants done. But we won't try it except on our terms. Tell him that. Then I'll give him the sad news." Swan translated. The Prabhrindra did not look happy. His sister looked like she wanted a fight. Swan faced me.
"Let's have it."
"If I'm supposed to run an army that I'll have to build from scratch, I want to have the power to do it. I want to be the boss. No interference from anybody. No political crap, no cult feuding. Even the will of the prince will have to yield for the duration. I don't know if there's a Taglian word for what I want. I can't think of a Rosian word either. In the Jewel Cities, the man in the job I want is called Dictator. They elect him for a year at a time. Tell him that." Was the Prabhrindra happy? Sure he was. About as happy as any prince in that fix. He started lawyering, trying to bury me in ifs, ands, and buts. I smiled a lot. "I said I wouldn't negotiate, Swan. I meant it. The only chance I see is for us to do what needs doing when it's got to be done, not 6 weeks later, after the ruffled feathers have been smoothed, the special interests have had their say, and the graft has been got out." Mogaba had on the biggest smile I'd ever seen from him. He was having fun listening. Maybe he'd always wanted to talk that way to his bosses in Gayasli. I said, "The way I hear it, in about 5 weeks the rivers will be down enough that the Shadow Masters can put their troops across the main. They won't have internal problems slowing them down. They'll have every advantage but the Black Company on their side. So if the Prabhrindra wants even a prayer of winning, he has to give me the tools I need. If he doesn't, I walk. I find some other way. I won't commit suicide." Swan translated. We sat around looking tough and professional and stubborn. Lady and Mogaba did fine. I thought I might blow it by being nervous, but I did not. The Prabhrindra never tried to call my bluff. He argued, but never so hard I might lose my temper and stomp out. I never gave an inch. I honestly believed that the only chance, and that a ghost of a hope, lay in an absolute military dictatorship. And I had a little inside word, thanks to Frogface. "Hey, Swan, are these people in even bigger trouble than they've admitted?"
"What?"
He cast a nervous glance at the imp. "Your boss isn't trying to talk me out of anything. He's lawyering, politicking, wasting time. I get the feeling that down deep, he's scared to death. He agrees with me, only he don't want to have to make the choice between evils, because then he has to live with his choice.
Yeah, maybe. The Shadow Masters are going to be coming mean after what we did last summer. Going to make an example of us, maybe.
I want the veterans of that business. We'll turn them into squad leaders, assuming I get to be boss soldier around here.
There's an archaic Taglian word meaning warlord. You'll get your way. It's been argued out in council. The high priests don't like it, but they don't have any choice. Priests were the first people the Shadow Masters rubbed out wherever they took over. He can make any deal he has to. They're scared, man. After you win is when you gotta start worrying.
All I had to do was go on sitting tight, but I had come into the meeting with that assurance from Frogface. The damned imp grinned and winked at me. The day rolled on into night, and we had to have another meal, but we sealed our pact. For the first time since Juniper, the company had a real commission. Or vice versa. The Prabhrindra wanted to know my plans. He was not dumb. He knew Mogaba had been putting in 20-hour days. Put together a big flashy show for the gang that comes across the main, mostly. But we'll recruit and train for harder times down the line, too, assuming we handle that first bunch. While we're at it, we'll get an idea of what resources are available and how best to employ them. We'll root out enemy agents here and try to establish our own over there. We'll learn the terrain where the fighting may take place. Swan, I keep hearing about how little time we have till the rivers go down. How long will they stay down? How long till the next grace period? He translated, then said,
There'll be 6 to 7 months when there won't be enough rain to close the fords. Even after the rainy season starts, there'll be 2 or 3 months when they're passable part of the time.
Wonderful. We got here in the middle of the safe season.
Just about. We could get more than 5 weeks. That's a worst estimate.
We can count on it, then. Tell him we'll need a lot of help from the state. We have to have weapons, armor, mounts, rations, drays, drayage, equipment. We need a census of all males between 16 and 45, with their skills and occupations. I want to know who to conscript if I don't get volunteers. A census of animals would be helpful. Likewise, a census of weapons and equipment available, and a census of fortifications and places that could be used as fortresses. You should know a lot of this from last summer. Do you write the lingo here, Swan? He translated, then said,
No, I can't figure out the alphabet. Course, I never learned to read or write Rosian, neither.
He grinned.
Not Cordy, neither.
Blade? You kidding? Wonderful. Find me somebody who can. It's all right if he's one of the Radisha's spies. Two birds with one stone. I want you and him both attached to me at the hip till I learn the language. All right. What I need right now is for him to get out the word that volunteers should assemble in the Chandri Square an hour after dawn tomorrow. The Chandri Square was near our barracks and one of the biggest in Taglios. They should bring any weapons or equipment they have. We'll pick 2,500 to start training immediately and enroll the rest for later.
You may be too optimistic.
I thought these people were eager to get into it.
They are, but tomorrow is a holy day for the Guni cults. That takes in 4/10 of the lower classes. When they sit down, nobody else can do anything either.
There aren't any holidays in a war. They better get used to that right now. They don't show up, that's tough. They get left behind. Tell the prince to spread the word that the guys who volunteer earliest are the guys who are going to get the best deal. But everybody starts at the bottom, even him, if he enlists. I don't know the class structures here, and I don't care. I'll make a prince carry a spear and have a farm boy command a legion, if that's what the man can do best.
That attitude's going to cause problems, Cap. And even if they elect you god, you're going to have to walk careful around the priests.
I'll deal with them when I have to. The politics I can probably handle. I can twist arms and smooth fur if I have to, though mainly I just won't put up with it. Tell the prince he should hang around my headquarters some. Things will go smoother if people think he's part of what's happening.
Swan and the prince chattered. The Radisher gave me a searching look, then a smile that said she knew what I was up to. The devil in me made me wink. Her smile broadened. I decided I should know more about her. Not because I was attracted to her, but because I suspected I would like the way she thought. I like a person with a sound, cynical attitude. Old Smoke, the so-called fire chief, did nothing all evening but nod off and start awake. Being a cynic, I approved of him as a public official. The best kind are those who stay the hell out of the way and don't mess with things. Except for me, of course. One thing left for tonight, I told Swan. Financing. The Black Company don't come cheap. Neither does creating, arming, training, and maintaining an army. Swan grinned. They got you covered, Cap. Back when they first heard the prophecies of your coming, they started raising money. It won't be a problem. It's always a problem. He smiled. You won't be able to spend like there ain't no bottom to the bucket. The woman hangs onto the purse strings around here, and she's famous for being tight. Good enough. Ask the prince if there's anything else he needs now. I've got a ton of stuff to do. There was another hour of talk, none of it important. All of it the Prabhrindra and Radisha trying to get an idea what I was planning, trying to get a clearer picture of my character and competence. Giving a stranger life and death power over their state was one long bet for them. I figured I'd do a little something to help their underground scheme. I became impatience itself, but was proud of me. I controlled it. Walking home after dark without crowds, I asked Lady, "Can we count on Shifter's help?" "He'll do what I tell him."
"You're sure?"
"Not absolutely. It looks that way, though."
"Could he do some scouting over Shadow Master country, shifting into something that flies?"
"Maybe," she smiled. "But he wouldn't have strength enough to carry you. And I know you. You wouldn't trust a report from anybody but you." "Well, you'll have to take your chances. Trust him as much as you dare. He'll serve me if I command him. But he isn't my slave. He has his own goals now. They may not be your goals." I thought it might be a good time to sneak up on something I'd been sliding around since I'd caught her playing with fire in a cup overlooking Gayasli. "And your own restored talent." She was not fazed. "You're kidding. I might bother Goblin if I sneaked up on him and hit him with a hammer. Otherwise, I'm useless. Even small talents have to be exercised to be any good. There's no time for exercise. I guess we'll all just do what we can." Mogaba said, "I have several ideas for disarming problems arising from religious friction, at least temporarily." "Speaking of which, I need to carve on that priest's kid. One Eye, I'll need you to back me up." "Go ahead, Mogaba." His notion was straightforward. We would raise our own army without regard to religion and use it to meet the Shadow Master's main thrust. We would encourage the cults to raise their own forces and use them to meet threats that appeared at the secondary fords. But we would not surrender our claim to supreme command. I laughed. "I have a feeling you're looking for a repeat of the debacle of last summer, when nothing should disarm them more thoroughly than failures and displays of incompetence. I thought we ought to give them their chances." "Sounds good to me. Work up a couple of questions for recruits so we can get the drift of their religious commitment and tolerance when we sign them up. You ought to tell me how to find this guy Jahamaraj Jah." Chapter 31. Taglios, a boot camp city. It had been years since I hazarded internal surgery. Before I started, I was shaky and filled with doubts, but habit took hold in the crunch. My hand was steady. One Eye restrained his natural exuberance and used his talents judiciously to control bleeding and deaden pain. As I washed my hands, I said, "I can't believe it went that well. I haven't done one of those since I was a kid, practically." "She going to pull through?" One Eye asked. "Should, unless there are complications. I want you to check back every day to make sure she's doing all right."
Hey, Croker, I got me an idea. Why don't you buy me a broom?
What?
When I wasn't busy doing anything else, I could be sweeping up. I'll get myself one, too. I spoke to the child's parents briefly, through Frog Face, cluing them in on what had to be done. Their gratitude was stifling. I doubted it would last. People are that way. But as we were about to leave, I told the father, I'll collect on this. Anything. It won't be trivial when the time comes. He understood. He looked grim as he nodded. We were about to step into the street when One Eye said, Hold up. He pointed. I looked down at three dead bats arranged in a neat, equilateral triangle. Maybe the boys aren't imagining things. The bat cadavers were not neat. A crow cawed somewhere nearby. I muttered, I'll take my help where I can get it. Louder, could you make a bat spy on people? One Eye thought about it. I couldn't, but it might be possible, though they aren't long on brains. That's all I needed to know. Except for who was running the bats. The Shadow Masters, I presumed. The 20-hour days started. When I was not preoccupied with anything else, I tried to learn the language. After you have learned enough, they come easy. Or easier, anyway. We went at it trying to keep things simple. All the evidence indicated that the Shadow Masters would use the Goja Ford for their main crossing. I abdicated the defense of the others to the cult leaders, and concentrated on what I thought I'd need to stop that main force in its tracks. If it got across the river and started rolling north, I feared we would have a repeat of Swan's campaign. Any victory at all would be at a price too dear. I started by forming the cadres of two legions based on the model used by the Jewel Cities in early times, when their armies were citizens with little field experience. The command structure was the simplest possible. The organization was pure infantry. Mogaba was overall commander of the foot and boss of the first legion. His lieutenant Ochiba got the second legion. Each got to keep 10 nar for NCOs, and each of those 10 picked 100 candidates from among the Taglian volunteers. That gave each legion a 1,000-man base, which would be expanded about as fast as the nar could teach them to march in a straight line. Mogaba got Weezer, Lion and Heart for staff work. I did not know what else to do with those three. They were willing, but had little practical value. Sindawe and the remaining Nar were to form a third training and reserve legion that I expected to employ only in desperation. Otto, Hagop, the guards and the Roy I charged with putting together a cavalry force. Sparkle, Candles, Cletus and the rest from Opal and Beryl got stuck with the fun stuff— quartermastering and engineering. Hagop's nephew ended up with him. He was another one who was useless. The ideas were mostly Mogaba's recommendations, which he had worked out while I was scouting southward. I did not agree with all of them, but it seemed a sin to waste the work he had done, and we had to move in some direction. Now. He had it all figured. Sindawi's legion would both produce new people for the leading two units and would develop as a force itself, more slowly. He did not believe we could manage a force larger than three legions till we developed a lot of local talent. Lady, Goblin, One Eye, and I were left to handle everything else. The important, exciting stuff, like dealing with the Prabhrindra and his sister. Like setting up an intelligence operation, finding out if there were any local wizards we could use, charting strategy, coming up with gimmicks. Good old Mogaba was willing to leave me the staff work and strategy. Actually, about the way it should be. The man embarrassed me with his competence. Goblin, I guess you should take counterintelligence, I said. Ha! One Eye said. That fits him perfectly. Borrow Frog Face whenever you need him. The imp moaned. He got no pleasure out of having to work. Goblin put on a smug look. I don't need that thing, Croker. I did not like that. The runt was up to something. Ever since we came back from the country, he had had that smugness about him. It meant trouble. He and One Eye could get so involved in their feud, they forgot the rest of the world. Time would tell what was up. Whatever you say, I told Goblin, as long as you get the job done. Dangerous agents of the Shadow Masters I want you to take out.
Small timers set up so we can feed them false information. We've also got to keep one eye on the big priests. They're bound to give us grief as soon as they figure out how. Human nature. Lady, I put in charge of showmanship and planning. I had decided where I wanted to meet the enemy already before I had anything to meet him with. I told her to work out the details. She was a better tactician than I. She had managed the armies of an empire with astonishing success. I was learning that part of a captain's job is to delegate. Maybe genius lies in choosing the right person for the right task. We had maybe 5 weeks, and the time was counting down, and down, and down. I did not think we had a prayer. Nobody got much sleep. Everybody got testy. But that is the way it is in our business. You learn to adjust to it, to understand. Mugabe kept telling me it was going great on his end, but I never got time to review his outfits. Hagop and Otto were less pleased with their progress. Their recruits were of classes that saw discipline as something imposed only upon their inferiors. Otto and Hagop had to resort to ass-kicking to get their people in line. They came up with a couple of interesting ideas, like adding elephants to the cavalry. The Prabhrindra's census of animals had turned up a few hundred work elephants. I spent my time rushing around in confusion, more often a politician than a commander. I avoided recourse to dictate when I could, preferring persuasion, but two of the high priests gave me no choice most of the time. If I said black, they said white, just to let me know they considered themselves Taglios's real bosses. If I'd had time, I'd have gotten vexed with them. I didn't, so I didn't play their games. I got them and their chief boys together, with the Prabhrindra and his sister chaperoning, and told them I didn't care for their attitude, that I would not tolerate it, and the schedule from here on in was to do it Croker's way or die. If they didn't like that, they were welcome to take their best crack at me. Then I would roast them over a slow fire in one of the public squares. I did not make myself popular. I was bluffing, sort of. I would do what had to be done, but did not expect to have to do it. My apparently violent nature should cow them while I got on with the job. I would worry about them after I'd turned the Shadow Masters. Thinking positive all the time, that's me. I'd have starved if I'd gotten a pound of bread for every minute I really believed we had a chance. Several people made sure news of the face-off got out. I heard rumors that some temples closed their doors for lack of business. Others had to turn away angry crowds. Great. But how long would it last? These people's passion for supernatural nonsense was far older and more ingrained than their passion for militarism. "What the hell happened?" I asked Swan, first chance I got. I was getting the language, but not fast enough to grasp religious subtleties. "I think Blade happened." He seemed bemused. "Say what?" "Ever since we've been here, Blade's been spreading seditious nonsense about priests should stick to taking care of souls and karma and keep their noses out of politics. Been selling that down to our place. And when he heard about your confab with the high priests, he got himself out in the streets to spread what he called the true story. These people are all for their gods, you better remember that, but they ain't so hot on some of their priests. Especially the kind that grab them by the purse and squeeze." I laughed. Then I said, "You tell him to back off. I've got troubles enough without a religious revolution." "Right. I don't think you got to worry about that." I had to worry about everything. Taglian society was under extreme stress, though it took an outsider to see it. Too many changes too fast in a traditionalist, restrictive society. No way for conventional mechanisms to adjust. Saving Taglios would be like riding the whirlwind. I would have to stay light on my feet to keep the frustration and fear directed against the Shadow Masters. One eye wakened me in the middle of one of my 4-hour snoozes. "Jahamaraj Jai's here. Says he's got to see you right now." "His kid take a turn for the worse." "She's fine. He thinks he's going to pay you off." "Bring him in." The priest slipped in looking furtive. He bowed and scraped like a street dweller. He plied me with every title the Taglian people had been able to imagine, including healer.
Appendectomy was a piece of surgery unknown in those parts. He looked around as though expecting ears growing out of the walls. Maybe that was an occupational hazard. He did not like the sight of Frog Face at all. That suggested some people knew what the imp was. I should keep that in mind.
"Is it safe to talk?" he asked.
I followed that without translation. "Yes."
"I must not stay long. They will be watching me, knowing I owe you a great debt, healer."
"Then get on with it," I thought.
"Yes?" "The High Priest of Shaddaa, my superior, Gojarindi Goj, whose patron is Hadaa, one of whose avatars is Death. You distressed him the other night. He has told the children of Hadaa that Hadaa thirsts for your ka."
Frogface translated and added commentary.
"Hadaa is the Shaddaa goddess of death, destruction, and corruption, Cap. The children of Hadaa are a subcult who dedicate themselves by way of murder and torture. Doctrine says that should be random and senseless. The way it works out, though, is that those who die have got onto the boss priest's shit list."
"I see," I smiled slightly. "And who is your patron, Jahamaraj Jah?" He smiled back.
"Kadi."
"All sweetness and light, I take it."
"Hell no, Chief. She's Hada's twin sister. Just as damned nasty. Got her fingers into plague, famine, disease, fun stuff like that. One of the big things the Shaddaa and Guni cults squabble about is whether Hadaa and Kadi are separate deities or just one with two faces."
"I love it. I bet people get killed over it. And priests look at me weird when I say I can't take them seriously. One Eye, you figure I'm guessing right when I think our buddy here is helping himself by trying to weasel out of a debt." One Eye chuckled. "I figure he plans to be the next Shaddaa boss." I had Frog Face go straight at him. He did not blush. He admitted he was the most likely successor to Gojarindi Goj. "In that case, I don't figure he's done anything but make the vig. Tell him thanks, but I figure he still owes me. Tell him that if he all of a sudden finds himself boss priest of the Shaddaa, I'd be real proud if he'd make his people mind and not get too ambitious himself for a year or two." Frogface told him. His grin went away. His lips tightened into a wrinkly little nut, but he bobbed his head. "Get him on the road, One Eye. Wouldn't want him getting in trouble with his boss." I went and wakened Goblin. "We got priest problems. Character named Gojarindi Goj is sicking assassins on me. Take Mergen, go over to Swan's Dive, dig out his resident priest hater, have him finger the guy. He needs promoting to a higher plane. It don't have to be spectacular, just unpleasant, like having him shit himself to death." Grumbling, Goblin went to find Mergen. One Eye and Frogface got to watch for would-be assassins. They were professionals, but they were not up to getting past Frogface. There were six of them. I had some of the Gnar, who favored that sort of thing, take them to a public square and impale them. Gojarindi Goj went west a day later. He perished of a sudden, dramatic surfeit of boils. The lesson was not lost on anyone. The lesson was, of course, don't get caught. Nobody seemed upset or displeased. The attitude was, Goj had placed his bets and taken his chances. But the Radisha did give me some thoughtful looks, while we fussed over whether I needed another 1,000 swords, and especially if I needed the 100 tons of charcoal I had requisitioned. Actually, we were to the games-playing stage already. I asked for 100 tons, knowing I wanted 10, figuring to groan and gripe and give in and get more of the arms. The recruits were providing their own kit. The arms I most wanted, financed by the state, were pieces that could not be well explained to a civilian. I was having trouble enough convincing Mogaba that wheeled light artillery might be of value. I was not sure it would, myself. That depended on what the enemy did. If they behaved as they had before, artillery would be wasted. But the model was the Jewel City's Legion. Those guys dragged light engines along to knock holes in enemy formations. Oh, fuss. Some things you just settle by saying, I'm the boss, and you'll do it my way. Mogaba did not mind.
17 days to go, estimated. Lady visited me. I asked her, "Will you be ready?"
"I'm almost ready now."
"One positive report amongst the hundreds. You brighten my life." She gave me a funny look.
"I've seen Shifter. He's been across the river."
One Eye and Goblin, in their capacities as spy masters, had had little luck, mostly because the main was just plain uncrossable. They had no lack of volunteers. As for cleaning up the Shadow Master's agents in Taglios, that had not taken them 10 days. A bunch of little brown guys had bitten the dust. A few native Taglians remained. We were feeding them plenty of truth, and just enough bull to tempt their masters into making their major crossing effort where I wanted it.
"Ah, and did he learn anything we want to hear?"
She grinned.
"He did. You get your wish. They'll bring their main force over at the Goja Ford, and they won't be with their armies. They don't trust each other enough to leave home base unguarded."
"Beautiful. Suddenly I feel like we've got a chance. Maybe only 1 in 10, but a chance."
"And now for the bad news."
"I guess it had to be. What is it?"
"They're sending an extra 5,000 men. 10,000 in the Goja force, 1,000 each in Theri and Vedna Bota. The rest come across at Numa. They tell me Numa is crossable 2 days earlier than the Goja Ford is."
"That's bad. They could have 3,000 guys behind us when it hits."
"They will, unless they're morons."
I closed my eyes and looked at the map. Numa was where I had told Jahamaraj Jah his Shadar people could make their mark. He had raised 2,500 cultists only by straining. Most Shadars wanted to wait and get into our ecumenical force. 3,000 veterans would roll right over him.
"Cavalry," I asked.
"Have Jah meet them at the water's edge and do what he can, and fall back, and have our cavalry hit them from the flank as they're about to break out."
"I was considering sneaking Mogaba's legion down. Smash them, then rout march to Goja. But you're right, cavalry would be more efficient. Do you trust Otto and Hagop to handle it?"
I did not. They were having their problems taking charge. Without the bloody-minded Roy to kick ass where that was needed, their force would have been a traveling circus.
"You want it? You've done a field command."
She looked at me hard.
"Where have you been?"
"Right. I'd been there often enough."
"You want it?" "If you want me to take it."
"Singe me to a crisp in the fire of your enthusiasm. All right. But we won't tell anybody till it's time. And Jahamaraj Jah not at all. He'll try harder if he don't know help is coming."
"All right.
Any other news from our seldom-seen friend?"
"No."
"Who is that woman he's dragging around?" She hesitated a moment too long.
"I don't know."
"Odd. Seems like I've seen her somewhere before, but I can't place her." She shrugged.
"After a while, everybody gets to look like somebody you've seen before."
"Who do I look like?" She didn't miss a beat.
"Gastra Telsar of Novak de Bracken. The voice is different, but the heart could be the same. He moralized and debated with himself, too."
How could I argue? I'd never heard of the guy.
"He moralized once too often. My husband had him flayed."
"You think I moralized about Goj?"
"Yes. I think you put yourself through hell after the fact. A net gain. You've gotten smart enough to get them first and cry later."
"I don't think I want to play this game."
"No, you wouldn't. I need some of your time for tailors to take your measurements."
"Say what? I got me a flashy uniform already."
"Not like this one. This one is for boggling the minions of the Shadow Masters, part of the showmanship."
"Right. Whenever. I can work while I'm being measured. Is Shifter going to be there for the show at Goja?"
"We'll find out the hard way. He didn't say. I told you, he has his own agenda."
"Wouldn't mind having a peek at that. He give you one?"
"No. Mogaba is staging a mock battle between legions today. You going?"
"No. I'm going to be sucking up to the Radisha for more transport. I got the charcoal. Now I gotta get it down there." She snorted.
"Things were different in my time."
"You had more power."
That's true. I'll send the tailors and fitters.
I wondered what she had in mind.
What?
Did I see that?
What was that?
Did she shake her tail as she was going out?
Damn me. My eyes must be starting to go.
Weekly assessment session. I asked Mergen, how's the bat situation?
What?
I had caught him from the blind side.
You brought the bat problem up. I thought you were keeping track.
I haven't seen any for a while.
Good. That means Goblin and One Eye got the right people out of the way. From where I sit, everything looks like it's going smooth. Probably faster than we had reason to expect. I'd had no individual complaints for a while. Lady had found time to help Otto and Hagop put the fear into their snooty horsemen.
Mogaba?
12 days left on the worst-case estimate. It's time to put teams out to watch the river stages. Worst case might not be absolutely worst.
The Radisha is ahead of you. I talked to her yesterday. She'd just grabbed off half the post-riders for that. Right now, the river is running higher than expected. That may not mean anything. We'll have plenty of weather yet.
Every day we get is another 100 men I can take into each legion.
Where are you at now?
3,300 each. I'll stop at 4,000. Be time to move out then anyway.
Think 5 days is enough to get down there. That's 20 miles a day for guys who aren't used to it.
They'll be used to it. They do 10 a day with field pack now.
I'll get out to look them over this week. Promise. I've got the political end pretty well whipped.
Hagop, you guys going to be ready?
It's coming together, Croker. They've started to realize we mean it when we say we're trying to show them how to stay alive.
It's getting close enough that they have to think about it as more than a game.
Big Bucket, how about you guys?
Get us 50 more wagons and we can roll tomorrow, Captain.
You look at the sketches of that town?
Yes, sir.
How long to set it up?
Depends on materials. For the palisade and manpower. Lot of trenching. The rest, no problem.
You'll have the manpower. Sindawe's bunch. They'll go down with you and move on later as our reserve. I'll tell you, though, the resource situation is bleak. You'll end up depending on the trench more than the palisade.
Cletus, what about artillery?
Cletus and his brothers grinned. They looked proud of themselves.
We got it. 6 mobile engines for each legion, already built. We're working the crews on them now.
Great. I want you to go down with the quartermasters and engineers and get a look at that town. Put some of the engines in there.
Big Bucket, you guys better head out as soon as you can.
The roads are going to be miserable.
If you really need more wagons, mooch them from the citizens.
Be quicker than me trying to gouge them out of the Radisha.
So, can't anybody come up with anything I can fuss myself about? You know I'm not happy unless I'm worrying.
They looked at me blankly.
Finally, Mergen blurted out, "We're going to meet their 10,000 with our 8. Isn't that worry enough, sir?"
10,000?
That's the rumor, that the Shadow Masters increased the invasion force.
I glanced at Lady. She shrugged.
I said, "We have unreliable intelligence to that effect, but we'll be more than 8,000 with the cavalry. With Sindawe, we'll actually outnumber them. We'll have the field position, and I have a trick or two up my sleeve."
"That charcoal?" Mogaba asked.
"Among other things."
"You won't tell us?"
"Nope. Word has a way of getting around. If nobody but me knows, I can't blame anybody but me if the other side finds out."
Mogaba smiled. He understood me too well. I just wanted to keep it for myself.
We commanders are that way, sometimes. My predecessors never told anybody anything till it was time to jump.
Afterward, I asked Lady, "What do you think?"
"I think they're going to know they were in a fight. I still have grave doubts about winning, but maybe you're a better captain than you want to admit. You put every man where he can do the most good.
Or least harm." Weezer and Hagop's nephew still had not shown me they were good for anything.
7 days till deadline. The quartermasters and engineers and Sindawe's reserve legion were 2 days gone. Incoming post-riders reported their progress as disappointing.
The roads were hopeless. But they were getting help from people along the way. In places, the troops and locals backpacked the freight while the teams dragged the empty wagons through the mud. We were going to get some grace. We were still getting drizzle when that should have ended a week ago. Reports had the fords way too high to cross. The watchers guessed we had at least 5 extra days. I told Mogaba, who needed time more than anyone else. He grumbled that his main accomplishment to date was that he had taught his troops to march in straight lines. I thought that was the critical lesson, if they could maintain order on the battlefield. I was not comfortable with the gift of time. As each day perished in turn and I had more reports of the trouble the advance party was having, I grew ever more antsy. 2 days before our originally planned departure, I summoned Mogaba. "Have you relaxed any because of the extra time?" "No." "Not easing up at all?" "No. If we leave 5 days later, they'll be 5 days more prepared." "Good." I leaned back in my chair. "You're troubled." "That mud. I had Frog Face go scout. Sindawe is still 20 miles from Vejagedia. What'll it be like for the mob we'll take down?" He nodded. "You're thinking of leaving early." "I'm seriously considering leaving when we originally planned, just to make sure. If we're there early, we can get rested and maybe a little more trained under field conditions." He nodded again, then took me by surprise. "You play hunches sometimes, don't you?" I lifted an eyebrow. "I've watched you since Geasli. I'm beginning to understand how your mind works, I think. And sometimes I think you don't understand yourself well enough. You've been troubled all week. That is a sign you have a hunch trying to come through." He left his chair. "I'll proceed on the assumption that you'll leave early." He left. I thought about him knowing how my mind works. Should I feel flattered or threatened? I went to a window, opened it, looked at the night sky. I saw stars between racing clouds. Maybe the cycle of daily drizzle was over, or maybe it was just another pause. I went back to work. My current project, taken catch as catch can, was one I was working on with Frogface. We were trying to figure out what had become of the books missing from all the libraries around town. I had an idea that a certain anonymous official had them squirreled away in the Prabhrindra's palace. The question was, how to get to them. Invoke my powers as dictator.
"Ignore the river."
"Say what?" I looked around. "What the hell?"
"Ignore the river."
A crow stood on the windowsill. Another settled beside it. It delivered the same message. Crows are smart, but only for bird brains. I asked what they were talking about. They told me to ignore the river. I could put them on the rack, and they would not tell me more. All right, I got it. Ignore the river. Shoo. Crows. All the time with the damn crows. They were trying to tell me something, sure. What? They had warned me before. Were they saying I should pay no attention to the river stages? That was my inclination anyway, because of the mud. I went to the door and yelled, "One Eye, Goblin, I need you." They mustered in, looking surly, standing well away from one another. Not a good sign. They were feuding again, or working up to it. It had been so long since they had eased the pressure that it might be a major blow-up. "Tonight's the night, guys. Take out the rest of the Shadow Master's agents."
"I thought we had some extra time,"
One Eye carped.
"We might have, and we might not. I want it done now. Take care of it."
Under his breath, Goblin muttered,
"Yes, sir, your dictatorship, sir."
I gave him a dirty look. He moved out. I went to the window and stared out at that clearing sky. I had a feeling things were going too good. Chapter 32 Shadow Light. The Shadow Masters met in a haste that left them exhausted. The meet had been set days earlier, but as they traveled, a cry had gone out saying it was too late for lazy, comfortable movements. They were in the place of the pool and uncertain dimensions and shadows. The woman bobbed restlessly. Her companion was agitated. The one who spoke seldom spoke first.
What is the panic?
Our resources in Taglios have been exterminated, all but the newest, as suddenly as that, she snapped her fingers.
Her companion said,
They are about to march.
The woman.
They knew who our resources were, which means everything we learned through them is suspect.
Her companion.
We have to move sooner than we planned. We cannot give them a minute more than we must.
The quiet one asked,
Have we been found out?
The woman.
No, we have the one resource close to the heart, still undetected, if mostly ineffective. It hasn't reported a hint of suspicion.
We should join the troops. We should leave nothing to the hazard of battle.
We've argued this out already. No, we will not risk ourselves. There is no cause to think they will have any chance against our veterans. I have added 5,000 men to the invasion force. That is enough.
There was another thing. The thing you called us here to present.
Yes, our comrade of Shadowcatch and Overlook is not as southward obsessed as he would have us think. He infiltrated some of his people into Taglian territory the past year. They attacked the leaders of the Black Company, and failed abysmally. Their efforts served only one purpose, beyond betraying his thinking. They gave me a chance to insinuate our one surviving resource into the enemy fold.
Then when next we meet him, we can mock him in turn.
Perhaps, if it seems appropriate. One piece of news comes out of his effort. Dorothea Senjak is with them.
A long stillness followed. Finally, the one who spoke so seldom observed,
That alone explains why our friend would send men north secretly. How dearly he would love to own her.
The female replied,
For more reasons than the obvious, there appears to be a relationship with the company's captain. She would be a valuable resource if that relationship is strong enough to be manipulated.
She must be killed as soon as possible.
No, we must capture her. If he can use her, so can we. Think what she knows, what she was. She might hold the key to ridding the world of him and of closing the gateway. She may be powerless, but she has not lost her memory.
The one who spoke seldom began to laugh. His laughter was as insane as that heard in Overlook. He was thinking anyone could use the memories of Dorothea Senjak. Anyone. The female recognized that laugh, understood what was happening in his mind, knew she and her companion would have to proceed very carefully. But she pretended not to see. She asked her companion,
Have you contacted the one in the swamps?
He wants nothing to do with us or our troubles. He is content with his fetid, humid little empire, but he will come around.
Good. We're agreed. We advance the schedule.
Heads nodded.
I will send the orders immediately.
Chapter 33 Taglios, Drunken Wizards. It had not been a good day. It got no better because the sun went down. The high had been Frogface reporting Sindawe reaching Vejagedia. The low followed immediately. There was no material to fortify the town. A ditch would be it. But the ground was so sodden the walls of a ditch would keep collapsing. Oh well, if the gods were out to get us, they were out to get us. All our wriggling on the hook wouldn't change a thing. I was ready to collapse into bed when Mergen burst in. I was so tired I was seeing double. Two of him did not improve the state of the universe. What now? I snapped.
Maybe big trouble. Goblin and One-Eye are down at Swan's place, drunk on their asses, and they've started in. I don't like the smell of it.
I got up, resigned to another sleepless night. It had been a long time brewing. It might get out of hand. What are they doing?
Just the usual so far, but there's no fun in it this time. There's an undercurrent of viciousness. Anyway, it stinks like somebody could get hurt.
Horses ready.
I sent word.
I grabbed up the officer's baton some Gnar had tossed me as we had approached Geyasli. No special reason other than it was the nearest thing handy for thumping heads. The barracks was quiet as we passed through. The men sensed something afoot. By the time I reached the stables, Mogaba and Lady had joined the parade. Mergen explained while they cursed our Taglian stableheads into readying two more horses. That the feud had gotten out of hand was obvious from blocks away. Fires illuminated the night. Taglians were coming out to see what was happening. The wizards had squared off in the street outside Swan's place. That had been gutted. Fires flickered up and down the street, none major, just patches gnawing the faces of buildings, evidence of the errant aim of a couple of drunken sorcerers. Those troublesome little shits were having difficulty standing, let alone shooting straight. So maybe the gods do watch out for fools and drunks. Had they been sober, they would have murdered each other. Unconscious bodies lay scattered around. Swan and Mather and Blade and several guys from the company were among them. They had tried to break it up and gotten creamed for their trouble. One Eye and Goblin were escalating. One Eye had a pained-looking frog face sicked on Goblin. Goblin had something that looked like a black snake of smoke growing out of his belt pouch. It was trying to get past Frog Face. When the things grappled, a shower of light washed the street, revealing Taglians crouched, watching from relative safety. I halted before they noticed me. "Lady, what's that thing Goblin's got?" "Can't tell from here. Something he shouldn't. A match for Frog Face, which I would have thought was out of One Eye's class." She sounded vaguely troubled. There were times I'd had that notion myself. It did not seem reasonable that you could walk into a shop and buy a Frog Face off the shelf. But it hadn't bothered One Eye, and he was the expert. Frog Face and the snake came to grips midway between their masters. They started grunting and straining and screaming and thumping around. I wondered aloud, is that what Goblin brought back from the country? What? From the first time I saw him after his set-to with the brown guys directing the shadows, he had this smugness about him, like he finally had him some way to whip the world. Lady thought, if he picked it up from the Shadow Master's men, it could be a plant. Shifter could tell us for sure. He ain't here. Let's make the assumption. The last fire burned itself out. Goblin and One Eye were totally preoccupied. One Eye stumbled over his own bootlace. For a moment it looked like Goblin would get the upper hand. Frog Face barely turned the snake's strike. Enough. We can't do without them, much as I'd like to bury them both and have done with their crap. I spurred my horse. Goblin was nearest me. He barely started to turn. I leaned down and thumped his head. I did not see the result. I was on One Eye already. I whacked him upside the head, too. I turned for a second charge, but Lady, Mogaba, and Mergen had them wrapped up. The battle between Frog Face and the snake died out, but they did not. They eyed one another across 10 feet of pavement. I swung down. Frog Face, can you talk, or are you as crazy as your boss?
He's crazy, Cap, not me. But I got an indenture. I gotta do what he says.
Yeah? Tell me this. What's that thing growing out of Goblin's pouch?
A kind of imp. In another form. Where'd he come up with it, Cap?
I wonder myself. Mergen, check these other guys out. See if we've got any real casualties. Mogaba, drag that little shit over here. I'm gonna knock some heads together. We plunked them down side by side with Lady and Mogaba holding them sitting from behind. They began to come around. Mergen came to tell me none of the unconscious men were injured. That was something. One Eye and Goblin looked up at me. I paced back and forth, smacking the baton into my hand. My dictator's stalk. I whirled on them. Next time this happens, I'm going to tie you two into a sack, face to face, and drop you in the river. I don't have the patience for it. Tomorrow, while your hangovers are still killing you, you're going to get up and come down here and make good the damage. The expense will come out of your pockets. Do you understand?
Goblin looked a little sheepish. He managed a feeble nod. One Eye did not respond.
One Eye, you want another whack upside the head?
He nodded, sullenly.
Good. Now, Goblin, that thing you brought back from the country, chances are it belongs to the Shadow Masters, a plant. Before you go to bed, I want it stuffed in a bottle or something and buried, deep.
His eyes bugged.
Croaker, you heard me.
An angry, almost roaring hiss filled the street. The snake thing came up off the paving and struck at me. Frog Face flung in from the side, deflecting it. In a sudden, drunken, bug-eyed panic, Goblin and One Eye both tried to get it under control. I backed off. It was a wild 3 minutes before Goblin got it squished into his pouch. He stumbled into Swan's place. A minute later, he came out carrying a closed wine jar. He looked at me funny.
"I'll bury it, Croaker."
He sounded embarrassed. One Eye was getting himself together, too. He took a deep breath.
"I'll give him a hand."
"Right. Try not to talk too much. Don't get started again." He had the grace to look embarrassed, too. He gave Frog Face a thoughtful look. I noted that he did not take the imp along to do the heavy work.
"What now?" Mogaba asked.
"Pains me all to hell, but now we count on their consciences to keep them in line. For a while. If I didn't need them so much, I'd make it a night they'd remember the rest of their lives. I don't need this shit. What are you grinning about?"
Lady did not stop.
"It's smaller scale, but this is what it was like trying to keep a rein on the 10 who were taken."
"Yeah, maybe so. Murgan, you are out here boozing anyway. You finish picking up the pieces. I'm going to get some sleep."
Chapter 34 To Goja. It was worse than I thought it would be. The mud seemed bottomless. The first day out of Taglios, after a cheering parade, we made 12 miles. I did not feel desperate, but the road was better nearer the city. After that, it got worse. 11 miles the next day, 9 each of the 3 days following. We made that good a time only because we had the elephants along. The day I wanted to reach the Goja Ford, I was still 30 miles away. Then Shifter came, wearing his wolf shape, prancing in out of the wilds. The rains had ended, but the sky remained overcast, so the ground did not dry. The sun was no ally. Shifter came with a smaller companion. It looked as though his understudy had caught on to shifting. He spent an hour with Lady before we moved out. Then he galloped away again. Lady did not look cheerful.
"Bad news."
"The worst. They've put one over on us, maybe."
I did not betray the sudden tightness in my innards.
"What?" "Recall the map of the main. Between Numa and Goja, there's that low area that floods."
I pictured it. For 12 miles, the river ran through an area flanked by plains that flooded whenever the river rose more than a few feet. At its highest stage, it could be 14 miles wide there, with most of the flooding on the southern side. That plain became a huge reservoir, and was the reason the Numa Ford became crossable before the Goja. But the last I'd heard, it was mostly drained.
"I know it. What about it?"
"Ever since they took the south bank, the Shadow Masters have been building a levee from the downriver end, right along the normal bank. It's something that's been talked about for ages. The Prabhrindra wanted to do it, to claim the plain for farming, but he couldn't afford the labor. The Shadow Masters don't have that problem. They have 50,000 prisoners on it, Taglians who didn't get across the river last year, and enemies from their old territories. No one's paid any attention because the project is one of those things that anybody who could would do. But... they've gotten the levee run out 8 miles to the east. That's not as huge a deal as it sounds, because it only needs to be about 10 feet tall. Every half mile they put in a larger filled area, maybe 150 yards to a side, like towers along a wall. They keep the prisoners camped there and use the platforms for materials dumps."
"I don't see where you're going."
Shifter noticed that they'd stopped extending the levee, but they were still stockpiling materials. Then he figured it out. They're going to dam the river, partially, just enough to divert water into the floodplain so they can drop the level at the Goja Ford sooner than we expect.
I thought about it. It was a cunning bit of business and entirely practical. The company had done a trick or two with rivers in its time. All it had to do was give them a day. If they got across unchallenged, we were sunk. The sneaky bastards. Can we get there in time?
Maybe. Even probably, considering you didn't wait to leave Taglios. But at the rate we're going, it'll be just barely in time, and we'll be worn out from fighting the mud.
Have they started damming yet?
They start that this morning, Shifter says. It should take them 2 days to get the fill in, and one more to divert enough water.
Will it affect Numa?
Not for a week. The water will keep dropping there for now. Shifter's guess is that they'll cross at Numa the day before they do at Goja.
We looked at each other. She saw what I saw. The Shadow Masters had robbed us of what we had in mind for the night before Goja. Damn them.
I know. This mud being what it is, I'll have to leave today to get there in time. I probably won't get back to Goja. Use Sindawe in our place. That town is a waste anyway.
I'll have to move faster somehow.
Abandon the wagons.
But
leave the engineers and quartermasters behind. Let them make the best time they can. I'll leave them the elephants. They're no good to me anyway. Have each man carry a little extra, whatever is most practical. Even the wagons might get there in time if they skip stopping at Vejagedya.
You're right. Let's get at it. I gathered my people and explained what we were going to do. An hour later, I watched Lady and the cavalry file away to the southeast. Mogaba's grumbling infantrymen, each carrying an extra 15 pounds, started slogging toward Goja. Even the old warlord carried a load. I was glad I had had the luck or foresight to send out the bulk of the stuff several days early. I walked with the rest of them. My horse was carrying 200 pounds of junk and looking humiliated by the experience. One Eye grumbled along beside me. He had Frog Face out scouting for lines of advance where the earth would least resist our passage. I kept One Eye on Lady. I felt hollow, empty. We'd both come to think of the night before the Goja battle as the night, and now that would not be. I suspected it would never be. There would always be something to stand in the way. Maybe there were gods who frowned on our admitting and consummating what we felt inside. A pox on them and all their illegitimate children. Someday, damn it. Someday. But what then? Then we would have to give up a lot of pretense. Then we'd have to face some things, decide some things, examine the possibilities and implications of some commitments. I did not spend a lot of time thinking about saving Taglios that day.